Thank you, Megan. I am going to have to talk to the team about that CV. It is absolutely fantastic to be here with all of you today to talk about CEDA's latest economic research. We have, of course, launched the report today, and I think it's a really important piece of work for CEDA. Connecting People with Progress is a pivotal document aimed at recalibrating the priorities for economic development to secure future progress that is tangible and relatable to the Australian community. It is a piece of work that's going to guide CEDA's research and focus our policy efforts for coming years. Now, before I get into talking about the research proper, there are just a couple of things I quickly wanted to draw people's attention to. You can, of course, see the report at CEDA's website, ceda.com.au. When you have a look at the report, what you'll see is that we've had contributions from well over a dozen stakeholders and member organisations expressing their insights and thoughts on things that are important to Australia's future progress. I mention that because I think the fact that we've had so many members and stakeholders prepared to contribute to this work shows that people are really interested in progressing a new reform agenda for Australia's future, and that they're interested in contributing to that. And so I wanted to acknowledge that and thank everyone who has contributed, including a number of our panellists who will be on stage later on today. Secondly, I did want to call out the tremendous effort of Jared Ball, CEDA's Chief Economist, who is here today. There's just been so much work that's gone into this. It's a piece of work that's largely been driven and curated in-house. And when you have a look at the report, I think you'll understand just how much work has gone into that. And credit to Jared for everything that he's done for that. So I did want to thank him for that. And thirdly, before I get into the research proper, you'll see on your tables one of these documents, which summarises CEDA's research findings. So in addition to publishing our research digitally, we've developed this as a way of trying to connect our message to a far wider audience than we have in the past. It is part of an ongoing effort that we're making to try to communicate complex ideas and important issues for Australia in different ways. And I just wanted to call out the communications team from CEDA, many of whom are here today, because they too have worked tirelessly to try to do something different and to bring it to this audience and to a wider audience. So thank you for doing that. Now, housekeeping out of the way, what do I want to talk about today? What I wanted to talk to you about today is why CEDA has undertaken this work and why now. What we found, and to talk about the policy stack that CEDA believes is critical for future economic success. So firstly, why have we done this work and why now? Well, Australia has enjoyed 27 years of uninterrupted economic growth, a world record. Looking at the headline numbers, we've been incredibly successful. However, there is a palpable disconnect between the narrative around the need for economic growth and development for Australia's ongoing prosperity and the expectations of the community. CEDA's Community Pulse 2018 research, released earlier this year in June, was a nationwide poll asking people how they felt about Australia's economic progress and the issues that mattered most to them. This poll showed that despite our economic success as a nation, only a small percentage of Australians believe that they have personally gained a lot from Australia's record run of economic growth. This disconnect is concerning, and it matters. It matters because if people feel that they have not benefited from sustained growth, they will see little reason to support future growth and economic development. For CEDA, those survey results must mark a low point in terms of the community's disconnect from growth. We must find ways to rebuild community trust that policy and growth are being pursued in their best interests. The question, of course, is how to do so. Therefore, in undertaking this research, CEDA wanted to reflect on three important issues. What has our record run of economic growth delivered? In other words, what have we done well? Where have we fallen short, and how should we refocus policy discussion and reform so that it relates to the community, policy that matters to people's lives? So let's start with the progress delivered. Australia has realised incredible gains through the expansion of the economy, trade, technology and investment. Let me quickly roll through some of the headlines that you may be familiar with. Our economy has tripled in per capita terms since 1960. The average disposable income of Australians has increased five times since 1960. Over the last three decades, average incomes have grown by just under 2% per year across all income groups, substantially faster than in other advanced economies. Life expectancy has increased by 10 years for women and 12 years for men since 1960. Today, 85% of secondary school students complete Year 12, compared to 23% 50 years ago. And a greater proportion of Australians are in jobs than in previous decades. In other words, we have achieved increased economic security for most Australians. More people in jobs, we're living longer, and we're better educated. And a standout feature of Australia's economic success has been our incredible resilience to economic shocks. Australia has seen its way through the Asian financial crisis, the tech boom bust of the early 2000s, the global financial crisis, and more recently the collapsing of commodity prices. How? Well, a flexible exchange rate, capacity for fiscal and monetary policy, proactive economic management and reform, and a touch of life have all played their part. We should not underestimate just how important this resilience and the avoidance of recessions have been in preserving and enhancing the livelihoods of many, many Australians. Australia has achieved all of this through its own unique brand of economic development. It is a brand of economic development characterised by strong immigration and multiculturalism, underpinned by a social compact to share prosperity, and an embracing of openness that has positioned Australia to benefit from globalisation and growth in Asia through both trade and investment. Now, despite this progress, we also know that there are areas where growth quite simply has not delivered. While measured inequality at the aggregate level has not increased in the last decade, too many Australians remain disconnected from opportunity and prosperity. Like the 700,000 Australians who find themselves in persistent and recurrent poverty. Like too many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and communities who are not being afforded the same economic and social opportunities as others in our society. And the 585,000 odd young Australians not in school or fully engaged in study or employment. We do need to do a better job of connecting women to prosperity. Women are underrepresented in senior roles, they get paid less on average, they have less superannuation on average, and they still do most of the housework. And while strong immigration and population growth have underpinned our success, we failed to predict or address growing pains in our capital cities. Housing affordability, congestion, and access to public transport are all areas of concern. Our environmental performance has been described as Australia's Achilles heel. Australia's biodiversity is under threat. And we still do not have a credible, consistent and efficient policy for reducing emissions. All the more surprising given that both major political parties went to the 2007 federal election supporting an emissions trading policy. So a decade of lost opportunity on that front. We face emerging limits to the progress that has been achieved. Australia's productivity growth is not at the levels that underpinned solid income growth in the past, and quite frankly, we know that in the future we're going to have to do more with less. That all-important resilience to economic shocks that I just mentioned has eroded. Government and household budgets look more vulnerable in the event of an external shock. We have less wiggle room, and we need to build our resilience in other ways. And we face new challenges, including how to make the most of the next wave of great structural change, what we might like to think of as virtual globalisation. This takes me now to CEDA's reform priorities for the future. Now, what you might expect me to do at this point is to outline a headline-grabbing list of must-have reforms. There are some that I could advocate without too much hesitation. Implement the NEG, for instance. But as we at CEDA thought about the key challenges and opportunities for Australia's future progress and how to connect the community to that progress in tangible ways, we didn't think that the answer lay in the reform to-do list. We concluded that what mattered more to securing Australia's future in a rapidly changing and uncertain world was to identify those policy areas fundamental to capturing future opportunities and retaining our social compact, and making sure that we have the processes and capabilities to deliver effective and timely policy, and to continually evolve policies in the public interest. So what CEDA has identified is a policy stack, of five areas: population, technology and data, workplace, workforce and collaboration, critical services and institutions that are of critical importance to our future. And they're important because they cover the areas that matter to future economic and social success, and they interact with one another so that if we focus on them together, we will increase the chances of delivering sustained economic growth and improved living standards in the areas that matter to the community the most. In pursuing reform across this stack, policies will need to be adaptive and policymakers agile and effective in tapping into expertise wherever it resides. This last point is important. I believe it will require policymakers to adopt different approaches to engagement, to collaboration and policy design. It requires a new operating model to deliver better outcomes. In each of these five areas, we are sure to highlight both the direction as well as specific areas of focus that we will seek to pursue for our research and advocacy. So let me say a little bit on each of these five areas. First up, institutions. This is an obvious one. Trust in our institutions, be it government or business, has absolutely taken a hammering in recent years. If that trust is not restored, it will be very difficult to make reform credible. We expect institutions to be accountable and to have the community's best interests at heart. But what does that mean in practice now? It means institutions, government, community, business, educational, working to understand community expectations. It means institutions responding to those expectations, explaining their purpose and intent, and being clear about the outcomes they are striving for. And it means institutions being accountable, showing the community how they are performing. So greater transparency and openness are going to be critical. But there's more to it from CEDA's perspective. If we agree with the US tech entrepreneur, Nick Hanauer, that prosperity should be defined as the accumulation of solutions to human problems, then we need not only greater transparency, but also new ways of working together. In the face of complex, indeed wicked problems, we have to renew and refresh our institutions so that they can work well together. Sharing ideas, sharing and connecting data, and co-designing solutions. New ways of working, a new operating model. Now for critical services, such as healthcare, aged care, and essential services. These are vital to people's everyday lives and make a substantial contribution to the economy themselves. We know this, and if there is any doubt that these are the top issues of concern for people, our community pulse research confirmed it emphatically. The key challenge that was called out in that survey is how to meet community expectations that continue to focus on the public provision of these critical services. The equation of rising costs, increasing expectations around service quality, aging populations and constraints on the public purse can only be resolved through new approaches, new sources of supply and new models of service provision in many sectors. That in turn will require better access to the use of data, a sharper focus on outcomes and greater transparency and collaboration. And all of this will require community trust and confidence in those institutions and in those processes. Trust and confidence that good outcomes will be delivered. I look forward to having a more in-depth conversation on the health and social infrastructure challenges with James later on in today's panel discussion. Now, quickly to population. This is an issue that, of course, has garnered a lot more attention of late. The composition, growth and distribution of our population is critical for economic development. However, serious public debate about population policy in Australia has been episodic. There are genuine community concerns about how population growth is being managed that need to be addressed. Australia is one of the most successful multicultural countries in the world. strong population and immigration growth has been a key feature of Australia's brand of economic development. But immigration policy has become a de facto population policy, and population growth has outpaced official projections, with resulting growing pains emerging in cities. To put this into perspective, the 2002 Intergenerational Report predicted that Australia's population would hit 25 million in 2030. Well, we got there a decade early. For a more strategic approach to immigration, and therefore population policy, is required. For existing residents and citizens, and for new migrants, the issues that impact the quality of life are the same. The ability to find a job, an affordable place to live, the ability to get to work easily and affordably, access to good schools, affordable health care, to be able to live in a safe and cohesive community, and to have access to environmental amenity. These issues and the ability to deliver against them should guide a strategic approach to immigration, to population and to settlement. Australia hasn't had a population policy or strategy since World War II. Now it looks like we may have many. There's a long list of elements that each of these strategies must include if they are to be effective. And of course, strategies across the jurisdictions must work together. This will be an important test for one of Australia's most important institutions, our federated system of government. The issue of population should be a cornerstone of a revamped COAG agenda. Now let me turn to workforce and workplace. Of course, in so many ways, it is in workplaces around Australia where we will succeed or fail in connecting people to future opportunities and progress. The issues are easy to list, but harder to deliver on. What are the big challenges and what's our area of focus? Firstly, there are too many people not getting the education they need. The disadvantages associated with this are building on one another, and we now have clearly identified groups who are consistently disconnected from prosperity. Government policies on the whole are not making inroads. It's time to focus on what the Productivity Commission calls handmade solutions, because this is where the better outcomes are being achieved. Secondly, our education systems have to evolve to enable lifelong learning. Now, I know this is a catch-all, often overused term, but let me be clear. A front-loaded, once-in-a-lifetime education to support a once-in-a-lifetime career is not the way of the future. Concerningly, issues like access to new skills and training throughout working life and the ability to move between jobs and sectors were not issues that people flagged in our community pulse survey as being important to them. In fact, quite the contrary. Now, maybe that's because the systems are working well. I'm not sure. But I'm not going to say too much more about this because I might steal some of Attila's thunder, and I wouldn't want to do that. So Attila will be speaking to some of these issues in our panel discussion later on. Finally, the vexed issue of workplace relations. For far too long, we've failed to have a joined-up conversation in Australia on this topic. Too often, the debate is a polarising one about system change, more regulation, less regulation, and nothing in between. The workplace relations legislative framework is an important part of this jigsaw, but let's not neglect the much broader set of factors that contribute to productivity and collaboration in workplaces, including education, managerial skills, competence, organisational culture, structure and communication. There's far too little discussion of the quality of regulation, of the quality of management, of the quality of the relationship between employers and employees, or how we can better enable innovation in the workplace. I'm proud to say that in this section of our report, there are external contributions from people representing business, workers and the education sector. I think this shows you that there is an interest in and a commitment to a more joined up conversation in this country. I think CEDA has the power to broaden this even further and to keep a constructive conversation going in the future. Finally, technology and data. Of course, this underpins all of the issues that I've touched on already. Technology and data are central to efforts to raise productivity, we know this. And we know that Australians were rapid adopters of information and communication technologies in the 1990s. But we slowed down and we need to recapture that enthusiasm. Technology has a role to play in addressing the key challenges in areas like critical services and areas such as energy, health and transport. But the solutions will not be straightforward, and they will always require a focus on public interest and on communicating this public interest well. From my health records experience, I think it's a case in point, where it appears that too little attention is focused on communicating the significant public benefits associated with better linkage and use of health data. While the future may be difficult to predict, we cannot afford to passively accept or to react to technological trends. This would risk Australia having a workforce underprepared for change, a regulatory framework that stifles innovation and competition, or fails to adequately protect human rights, and a tax system that no longer collects adequate revenue. Most importantly, reactive default yes or default no approaches to policy or ad hoc policy interventions will undermine community trust in the genuine power of technology to drive improved standards of living. Government has an important stewardship role to play, and it must do this in a way that puts people and public interest at the centre of policy and technology. One great example of this is the commitment to legislate the national consumer data right. This is a transformational reform because it will enable consumers to guide the use of data in a way that should promote competition and deliver benefits directly to them. It empowers consumers. It empowers consumers to use data about them for their benefit. Getting the balance right, including a focus on proactive engagement first and regulating second, will be tricky, but vital for encouraging beneficial new technologies and engendering community trust. Governments will need to find ways to get up close to emerging technologies, to understand their implications, and to develop good policy and regulation, building internal capabilities and broad and trusted external relationships will be critical. Again, the new operating model. Ensuring that those at the forefront of technology understand the community issues and expectations guiding government will also be very important. So against this backdrop, what role can CEDA play? Most importantly, we believe that our cross-sectoral membership base, a membership base that includes business, government, academia and the not-for-profit sector, will enable CEDA to bring unique insights to the policy issues that we have highlighted. And in case we missed it on the way through, we think greater collaboration must be a feature of Australia's brand of future economic development. Already, we're starting to dig into a few of these topics as part of our 2019 research agenda, and over time, our expectation is that CEDA's research and advocacy on key issues within each of these topics will evolve as the critical issues themselves emerge. However, along with the greater focus on this policy stack, CEDA believes that Australia needs to significantly change how it thinks about reform. In the 1980s, Australia required major economic reform. There were big ticket items, freeing Australia from the shackles of trade protection, floating the dollar, and reforms in domestic markets. In fact, these are reforms that have underpinned the economic success that we have enjoyed for 27 years. But they were reforms that could largely be done once. The next generation of reform will need to be different. Policy frameworks must be more nimble and responsive. Policy and regulation are struggling to keep up with both the community's expectations and the pace of change. That needs to change. To use a technology analogy that's probably already out of date, we need a plug-and-play policy approach. Now, I know Uber's been used as an example many times over, but it is a prime example of policy being unable to keep up. The Uber model is a pretty simple one. It shouldn't take government 2 years to deal with the regulatory requirements around a market disruptor. The community certainly didn't wait to embrace ride-sharing. 5 years since its official launch, almost one in five Australians are using Uber, and recent growth has been exponential, more than tripling in just the last 2 years. However, there are other examples. It shouldn't take a Royal Commission to see changes in areas that the community has been raising concerns about for some time. Essentially, we need to change the policy building blocks so that Australia has the right foundations to develop new policy solutions that can be easily plugged in and updated to secure economic development as circumstances change, and they will do so more rapidly in the future. How we talk about change also needs to evolve. In the past, major change has come about because of a burning platform or a significant threat. I hope that we might drive change now by engaging with the community and painting an aspirational picture of the future, a future that people want to be a part of. This will set our community up for future and enduring success. There will be no doubt that there will no doubt be many challenges, and challenges about how we tackle policy and emerging opportunities. But we've faced fundamental reform challenges in the past, and we've succeeded. We've stared down inflation consistently running at double digits, not to mention double-digit unemployment after recessions. The challenges this time are different, but fundamentally they require the same kind of courage and creativity. What we have sought to show with this research is that Australia's track record supports an optimistic take on our ability to deliver another generation of opportunity and progress. This is the approach that CEDA is taking, and I look forward to using this report as a starting point for our future discussions and collaboration to build that optimistic future. Thank you very much.